NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to banter back and forth about some NBA playoff basketball. No doubt about it, man. This is it's been a fun week since we first did our show, a little over a week technically. Lots to talk about, no doubt about it. The East is kind of, I'd say it's gone chalk, but I don't think, even though the Milwaukee series was chalk, it didn't feel like that going in. And I don't think anyone, even a Bucks fan, would have thought that the sweep would be in play. Obviously, the number one and number two seeds seemingly will finish those series off. They're in the power position. That's for sure. I'm talking Brooklyn and Philly. Atlanta has been blowing up these last couple games. Game five, now up 3-1, is back in New York. Maybe they can get that, and then that will hope, you know, maybe push it to a game seven. So that's been a bit of a surprise there. So obviously, I'd say Atlanta's play and Milwaukee's play has been something in the East. But if you look at the West Coast, man, the Western Conference, to have three out of the four series sitting at 2-2, and tonight Memphis could get the dub, and we could be literally looking at a 2-2-2-2-2-2. Like, I can't recall all four series being 2-2 in the first round in the Western Conference final. Or conference side of things. I mean, it is. We know it's the deeper conference. We've known that for quite some time, and it has been that way for a long time. But, man, you could make an argument maybe some of the semifinal or the conference final opponents. You know, maybe every once in a while the East has gone maybe 3-4 deep where you're like, I like that team better a little bit. But overall, man, the West is so, so deep. So there is a lot to talk about. AD injured again. LeBron clearly tentative when it comes to going to the rack. You know, let's say AD doesn't play. Who will they start? They probably aren't going to play him full minutes anyway, even if he plays. So who's going to pick up the slack? Gasol, Guzman. Kuzma. Morris, maybe they'll go Morris in the starting lineup. I really don't know. Luka is hurt, and the Clippers also went small, which was a great call there. So there, and obviously we got to talk about some crowd members acting like dipshits. So there's a lot to discuss, no doubt about it, here on the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. If this is your first time listening to this show here, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. But, you know, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropeadope if you don't want to. And you could download the show there or listen to the browser if you want. But if you don't, you can find this show under the Ropeadope Radio Podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Sticker, Spricker, really all over the place. We're part of this Grueling True Sports Podcast Network as well. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, everything in between. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. Plans start at $69.99. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. And they have the cloud DVR available, that's for sure. If you sign up for the choice package, it gives you a free year of HBO Max. I really botched that, but that's okay. AT&T TV. Okay, let's start with what I think is the biggest shocker of the playoffs thus far. There's a couple of them, but the one that stands out, Marshall, is the sweep. The Milwaukee Bucks, who got knocked out the last couple of years out of the playoffs after having great regular seasons. Now, obviously, they've made some tweaks to their roster, no doubt about it. But I did not see. I would have put so much damn money on this not being a sweep. I just would have. When you look at Holiday, even a guy like Forbes, kind of a hard-nosed dude like Portis, PJ Tucker, this is a little bit different of a team. I mean, even like I said, Holiday compared to Bledsoe. You know, so we could come in here and be like, well, it's a different team, and, you know, this is a different year. And of course, now we are starting to see what the bubble did, not just to Miami, not just picking on Miami. They got hot at the right time, but, you know, not having a home crowd thing definitely plays into it. Obviously, you're starting to see, like we'd mentioned, that the audience is acting a fool and just being dirtbags, some of them. But they're into it. It's going crazy. They're not even full capacity in the arena. Sound just lit, especially in some of them. But I didn't see this coming. I'll be the first to admit here. Wow, the Milwaukee Bucks, man. I did not see that. What are your thoughts here, man?
Well, I think that the biggest issue, Chris, for the past couple of years, and this has been noted by many people along with us, is that Budenholzer would not change his regular season coaching style game plans to postseason. And it came back to hurt him. But for this regular season, for example, like, they worked on their defense differently. They did pick and rolls differently. They let players rest for more games than regular. Like, I think they had a whole different mindset approach this year with the goal of, let's have a successful playoff run and maybe let's go 88% regular season compared to 100% and enjoy the postseason more. So when you have a coach who's more open-minded, a much better bench, and just maybe I'm pissed off motivated mindset.
Yes.
All that cashed in. And as we were saying before the show, I truly do think that if Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo were not complete garbage the first game, I think we still could be reliving moments from last year. But that didn't happen. Butler was 4 of 22 game one. Adebayo just didn't seem confident attacking the basket. Clearly, Tyler Hero was a recognized name. So with all those things, and again, that was a super close game anyways. That came down to literally the wire.
OT.
But yeah, but the Bucks won. And the thing that we knew, the thing that every analyst knew, the thing that a smart basketball fan knew was, okay, the Bucks won game one. Now the monkey's off their back. And clearly, that was a hurdle, Chris, that they enjoyed jumping over. And then it was like, oh, hell, we got this game, dude. It's done now. And they played like it. I know my buddy was betting the Heat and Bucks game to go over in game three in the first half. It was like, I don't know, some 110 points or something. But I kept checking the score, and the Bucks had 20 points in like the first 18 minutes of game three. Or sorry, the Heat did. So you're on home court, you're down 2-0. And even then, you're midway through the second quarter with your season on the line. You have 20 points in 18 minutes. Like, something never got going for that team. And to give Milwaukee credit, they just kept their foot on their throat, which is hard to do in sports. I still remember specifically, and we talked about this a lot last year because I saw what had happened. Jazz had that series over. That shit was done. And it was game five, and it was mid-third quarter, and I still remember it because I remember watching all those games. They were up by about 13 to 15 points mid-third quarter, and they had like a brief moment there where the Jazz kind of just let the Nuggets come back into it, and then you lose in seven. You know, so it can happen, and trust me, the Jazz are not the only team to ever take their foot off the throat, but Milwaukee never did. So clearly, with the Heat not being as good as they were last year, Adebayo and Butler not being great, the fact that Bryn Forbes scored more points in the series than Jimmy Butler tells you all you have to know. Now, there are some rumors that Kawhi could join the Miami Beach Party. And if that happens, dear Lord, look out. Have fun stopping that team. But for this year, a tough way to go out. But realistically, I mean, this is a pretty good veteran team. Adebayo and Duncan Robinson and Hero, they're all still young. I don't think the Heat are going away. Like, this team is going to be competing again next year, but they're not the focus of the conversation now. The focus is Milwaukee actually did something really productive in the playoffs, Chris, and this could be the propel they need to actually maybe make the Eastern Conference Finals for once, or to have a more successful playoff run, or, you know, who knows what mental hurdles this cleared for them aside from just being the Heat. I think this could be a good sign. And as you mentioned, to wrap up your summary of it, the bench is so much better. Last year, like, Antetokounmpo was doing all he could and didn't have a whole lot of help. I mean, I guess Lopez was okay, you know, but
Lopez has been dominant this year too. So
far. Yeah. But, you know, this was the names you mentioned are respectable role players. So a credit to them. Again, I picked the Heat in five. So I was massively wrong. But yeah, the monkey's off the back. I think they have all the confidence moving forward now. And they're a bigger team, which is a trait that some teams in the East don't have. Well, I guess I'm talking about the Nets. But yeah.
Yeah, hey, I was going to say, it's not Philly. But yeah.
True. But that's a hell of a way to win. You get a little time to rest. And yeah, that was just surprising. But again, credit well deserved, because the Heat are no slouch of a team. They just got punched in the face and they never punched back.
Now, I don't think it tilts as much off that game one as you're saying, as far as monkey off the bat. But I do understand what you're saying, as far as we all know, game one, if you're on the road and you get it, it does change the series. There's no doubt about it. Well, one, they'd have another game, right? Already, right? But when you lose a series by 20 and a half points, that's freaking nuts. Drew Holiday in three games versus the Heat, this is like two games ago, plus 88. You know what I mean? Just, there was 15 threes for the Bucks. This is Shane Young. I saw this tweet. 15 threes for the Bucks is pretty solid, not gonna lie. Oh wait, it's only halftime. Like, everything fell into place all around. I saw this other stat here from Hoops Type. The last three teams to lose the finals combined for zero playoff games, one since dropping the championship series. And I look back and I go, oh, yeah, that's true. Weird. I mean, credit to them. Now, I don't know if the monkey's out their back, because we are talking a first round, you know what I mean? And they have, you know, some teams to go through still. I think the monkey will be off their back once they make it to the NBA Finals. But this year is different, because look at who their second round opponent would be. That's tough to say, well, they got to go to the finals. Well, if they beat them, I think they're going to the finals. So, and just, we don't have to preview it now, but does that second round matchup, considering Milwaukee now, they're going to get, what is it, 5 days off or something like that? And normally I'd say 5-6 days is a little long, but after what that season was about, we said 72 games at 147 nights or something. I think all the rest you can get right now is good. They do have a fair amount of veteran players too, as you mentioned, not old guys, but veteran dudes who, you know, give them a little day off or whatever. Just in your head, we I don't want to preview the whole thing, but that's a pretty good series on paper, and what a great test for the Nets that we do want to see them tested. Let's see what they got, because they don't have a big guy. They don't this, they don't that. They've only played 10 games together. Is it a knee jerk to say, God dang, Milwaukee could beat them? Or, you know, what are your thoughts? Just like I said, we don't have to preview the series because we got so much to talk about, but it does kind of make you go, huh, we both thought Miami had a great chance to win this series. now, do you think Milwaukee has a decent chance to beat the Nets?
I do, just because the Nets don't have any bigs. So I think that it'll be obviously two different styles. But no, I think they do. Yeah, I mean, and they're going to play good defense. Obviously, Holiday and I keep confusing Holiday and Bledsoe. But yeah, I mean, you have some gamers here who can play better defense. Like the Celtics have no one can really play defense, and I think that Milwaukee's obviously a little more physical team. So no, I think it'll be a very competitive series. And if you are Brooklyn, you're not going to be able to just outscore them. Or if you do want to just play like, you know, pick up run and gun, like I think the Bucks can kind of go punch for punch for you, you know. And, you know, we'll see how the Nets do. But, yeah, I think it should be a very close series. I'm sure Vegas will favor the Nets. I mean, I guess they got to be, since they're the favorite already, to win the title. But, no, yeah, I think it should be a lot of fun. I don't think that will be a short series. And I think I would literally put it 50-50 just because the Bucks have at least played. Yeah, they've played together longer. And they maybe don't have the firepower, but they have at least a little more of a team chemistry dynamic.
Right. Moving on, Clippers in Dallas. Now, clearly, Luka's neck going into Game 5. We'll see how that is. We just saw a report from Wojo 2 hours ago saying he does feel better. Sometimes back and necks can, you know, spasms can last, you know, a month or a couple of weeks, or they go away in a couple days. It's such a hit or miss thing. If you look through the first three games, Clippers were allowing 116 per game, 51% from the field and 51% from three. And there was a point there where it was 66 points in game four. They had only shot 35% from the field and 4 of 26 from three. So it obviously, it changed things a lot. There was a couple of adjustments, though. You did see that the Clippers went small, and they didn't, you know, they just had Morris in there. They took Zubac out, who was having a little problems there. Leonard, you know, he's averaging 33 points, 8 boards, you know, shooting really well from the three. He's starting to find his spots. You can kind of tell off that. Luka, though, 5 made threes in 3 straight playoff games. That's a franchise record. And, oh, by the way, they did have some decent players there that played in the playoffs that could shoot the three, if you didn't know that. But, you know, we both thought the Clippers would do this. You see the first two games, Clippers down 2-0. They're way down in that game. It did kind of feel a little celebratory, I'll say, from the Dallas side when they got up big in that game. But credit to the Clippers for grinding back in and getting right back in that game. It didn't take long. It didn't take till like deep into the fourth quarter to be like, all right, we finally got up within a couple of points or tie it or whatever. They got back in that game relatively quick. So credit to them, because it looked like, oh boy, you know, you had people on Twitter, you know, talk. I mean, it's Twitter, so, you know, there's a lot of good and bad, of course. But, you know, people talking about they're going to Seattle. They're going to be the Seattle team. Do they want to go to Vegas? Just all sorts of stuff. Meanwhile, the Clippers are trying to find a place to build their own arena. And, you know, it didn't look good for them down 2-0, which was a surprise. It had to be to both you and I, because we both picked the Clippers on this one. But, you know, it really feels like if it goes to game 7, that probably means Luka's healthy.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, by no means am I a Clipper fan. I hope the Mavs win. I'm just concerned if you're a Mavs fan last night. I mean, we're not making earth-shattering news here, but you need Luka to be almost 100% or as healthy as he can be, just because.
And MVP level too. He has to play great too, not just be healthy, you know?
Yeah. He's got to be elite like he was last year and carry the team, which he did for the first two games. And again, they were up 17 in the first quarter of game 3. And then, like you said, the Clippers went on a good run by halftime as a 2-point game. So up 17, crowd's going nuts, and then bam, it's 2-point game, and Clippers pull it out. And the injury happened sometime in the first half, a neck or shoulder strain of some sort. But I was just kind of, I guess last night reminded me of, this is a Mavs team I've watched this year who at times I'm like, how the hell are they making the playoffs? And that was with a Luka who was healthy. And again, normally it's never really been him. I mean, I guess you can say a knock on him is he cries about fouls too much, which he needs to probably work on because he's not quite the LeBron time yet. Like he, that's and one part of his game.
Too. He's not a
and his free throw shooting is not, I guess, elite. But
that surprises me, dude. Not to interrupt you, that surprises me about his free throw shooting. It just throws me off how you can hit these crazy 30 footers, and then you know we see it with other players too, where you're just like, wow. He's really just a poor free throw shooter.
True. Yeah. Overall, he's still a top 10 player in basketball, I believe, and he's 22. So, I mean, you know, but it really just goes to show, and that's why I made a bet with my buddy at the start of the year that they would miss the playoffs. Was I remember just watching them, and it was early. It was dumb on my part, but I was like, man, he doesn't have the help this year. And he just doesn't. And last night go to show how it really is Luka carrying a bunch of average players. I know that Porzingis makes money and he had his time in New York. But, I mean, for me, when it's just his game doesn't look that comfortable. Like, he has times where he'll hit some spot-up threes and they go in. But for his shot selection, Chris, where he's had to just create a shot on his own, I just think he's put up a lot of like ugly or contested shots, and I'm like, dude, you know, if you're subbing Luka to the bench and Porzingis really can't create much on his own by himself, who the hell are you turning to? Like, Hardaway's disappeared at times this series, which is vitally important because he kind of is their number three player if you were to name one. So Hardaway hasn't been at his peak. And Luka's dinged up, and Porzingis isn't going to drop 30 and be a defensive, you know, lockdown star. So you're like, well, if you're the Mavs, you're also thinking, how are we going to pull this off? Now, again, maybe the trainers have a magic potion. Maybe he gets a cortisone shot. Who knows? Something happens, and he's good to go. Then I'll somewhere back to a series, because I, by no means do I think the games one or two were a fluke. I mean, the Clippers had to know going into the series, okay, Luka is the guy that got us last year. He'll get us again. You know, we got to be ready for him. And they were, and they won the first games in L.A. So I don't think that was lucky wins.
Yeah, and Hardaway played good in both those games, too.
Yeah, and you know, and again, and that's true, and part of it is just you feed off Luka. Like, that guy is so vitally important. So, I hope he's healthy. I hope just for the sake of watching games. I mean, last night, I didn't bet or anything, but I'm normally a guy that likes to enjoy watching games, but I knew about 3 to 4 minutes in the third quarter, I'm like, okay, this thing's done. Like, the Mavs were down 15 at halftime. The Clippers were up 22 about 5 minutes in. I'm like, okay, like, this thing, it's a wrap. Like, Luka was trying to get a couple of buckets here and there. You could tell he was grimacing. He was in some pain. But the defense was bad. Kawhi was getting any shot he wanted at all, like, just to his own benefit. It was like he was playing a game of pickup. So, yeah, I mean, the one highlight last night kind of was Boban coming in the first quarter, and the crowd got crazy and went on like a nice little run. And after the Boban run, it was almost a wrap from that point. And you are seeing the role players of the Clippers outplay the role players of Dallas. But if we were to compare all the names, you're just going to say, even if you ask a random guy at the bar, like, oh, well, yeah, he's better than him. He's better than him. You know, well, Beverly and, you know, Reggie Jackson are better than Maxi Kiebler and Powell. You know, it's just the Mavericks are in some trouble. So hopefully he comes back. But if not, I mean, they still have to come back to Dallas overall. Luka may be able to pull one out, but yeah. But injuries happen. Sometimes they benefit your team, sometimes they don't. Obviously, I wish Klay Thompson never tore his ACL in that Game 6 against Toronto. Like, you know, who knows how that goes? Like, you know, it's just a shitty part. And again, sometimes helps your team, sometimes hurts your team. That's just part of basketball, unfortunately. But yeah, I think big picture, Chris, I think they need to, and I'm not a Mavs fan, but I think you really do need to look at giving him another piece, because you really do have a future top five player in basketball. Like, the guy is so super special, and I don't think Porzingis is the thing they were expecting when they got him. So if you are the Mavs, that's not a guy you want in a couple of years to disappear. I mean, I'm sure Cuban will want to do all he can to keep him. But just if we're speaking for a Mavs fan line here for a second, you really got to find a way to maybe add a couple of more pieces, just because after Luka and after Porzingis, like, a lot of other teams in the West have a much sexier lineup than, again, Tim Hardaway and Maxi Kleber. Like, yeah, they got to do something, because you are wasting, because you never know what's going to happen. You're wasting years of a guy that could carry you to a deeper run, but we'll see how that plays out for them. But I definitely got to favor the Clippers on moving forward. If by chance he gets healthy again relatively, then we should be able to enjoy a couple more really fun games.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. It's a neck spasm. So it doesn't mean he's out, you know. He could come back and be okay, and next thing you know, they win the series. So we don't have to close the book all the way on him just yet. But spasms are weird like that. If you look, especially back, dude, it'd be like 4 days, dude's just out. And all of a sudden, boom, he's back, and he's good to go, and they're gone, you know. So, but either way, let's keep things moving a little bit quicker here. Let's go to the Lakers. AD, you know, obviously – a 2-1 position felt like, okay, you know, they lost game one. It was an ugly game. It was like 99-90. It kind of felt like a 90s, early 2000s game for both sides, really. Wasn't pretty or whatever, lost. Lakers came back, won both games, looking like they were in this game to potentially win it. And even down the stretch, I suppose you could say, when it got to like a six-point game, I remember them missing a wide open three. I remember them missing a layup. I remember them getting like a horrible turnover from Gasol. So they could have maybe tied that and gotten to overtime. Who knows? Credit to Phoenix for, you know, not letting that happen. But AD is injured again. Speaking of top five players, he's a top five player when he's healthy. But he does that have that Embiid thing where you're like, when he's healthy. And when bigs have these breakdowns, we were just talking about Porzingis, right? Like, where the hell is that defense that he showed, you know, in New York? Like, this guy could stuff you, dude. He was a rim protector. Now he's not even a rim protector. AD is hurt again, and he tweaked his knee. You could totally see that one. But, he worked his way through it. Now it looked like his groin area, he went down enough to leave the game. You know, that's a big problem, obviously. And they're saying there's a chance he'll play. He's going to try to play, of course, but you just don't know for a fact. And both of them, you know, at least AD had a little more time than LeBron before the end of the season. And he had actually kind of worked in some of that rust off, kind of get some confidence in his injury, because some of the times that's what it takes. You got to come back and, okay, now I'm feeling fully confident. And then, you know, in back-to-back games, he had 30-10 games. It was very dominant, right? But without him, let's say he doesn't start. Do you just go with Gasol? Do you go with Kuzman, who's struggling? Both of them. Well, Gasol he's not playing great. He is hitting his three, though. I'll give him credit there. Sometimes, you know, for how he shot the three percentage-wise this year, which was like 40 or 41%, and it's even higher in the playoffs, he's still tentative to shoot it. It's like, dude, you're open. Shoot the ball. So those guys aren't playing great. Maybe they go Morris and just kind of go with that somewhat small lineup, or smaller, I guess you could say, because he's played for him last year plenty. Something I've also known is you can clearly see LeBron is tentative to go to the rack. He is trying to get bailed out with a pass more and more and more. And I know a lot of his haters would be like, yeah, dude, he's afraid. You know, no, that's not what I mean. You can see he's trying to save off going to the rack for his ankle. Like, you can see it from a mile away. He doesn't want to continually go to the rack. And he's trying to get through this series and trying to keep going. Now, you saw once AD in the second half, He did get a little more aggressive and just little, he's picking his spots, but the spots are far and few between when he's just being aggressive. He's passing a lot. Just in general, the amount of corner threes that the Lakers have gone to, and don't get me wrong, I understand the analytics of the corner three, and that is if you're going to take a three, that is what you want for a lot of players because it's the shortest distance. We know that's the highest percentage to hit a three with, but and they are slacking him off at the three-point line, LeBron, so he is taking more threes, and he's knocking down a lot of them, but you can clearly see we knew he wasn't going to be 100%. But if you didn't think so, or if you needed to see some games, we now know he's not because you could see him holding off. You could see him like, I just don't. Because when you drive to the rack, you're on the ground, you're landing on more ankles. There's a lot of stuff going on. And so you could see it. And now I think off that second half and moving forward, now that it's 2-2, we are going to see a less tentative LeBron because he has no choice now. But without AD, I mean, I just want to hear your thoughts. I kind of went far there. I kind of went long. But what are your thoughts in general? We were kind of up and down anyway, not in this series per se. We both thought the Lakers would win. But just in general with these two coming back after missing so many games. And then who do they turn to in the starting lineup? I mentioned some guys. Who do they turn to if he can't play in game five?
Oh, well, speaking of injuries, I think that the Lakers are extremely lucky that Chris Paul had that weird shoulder collarbone injury, or I think they'd be down 3-1. Like, the Lakers game one played like complete trash. That game was abysmal. And I know they came out game two, but that was a close game. The series is still 2-2.
Game three, they played really well, though.
They did. So they've had.
And when we say extremely lucky, hold on now. Aren't they extremely lucky to have AD leave a game and not have full LeBron, though? I mean, that's lucky, too.
Yeah, but I think that even if – I think if you just had
– You said extremely lucky. That's what pointed out to me. Like, well, isn't it extremely lucky to have AD leave a game and LeBron being tentative?
Not necessarily, just because I think from watching game one, I truly think if Chris Paul is healthy, they'd be up 3-1 in the series, even if AD was healthy. Like, I know it's crazy because it's LeBron and AD, but the Suns have just been a more consistent team all year that play an overall better offense and overall better defense. Like, I've just seen enough Laker games this year in half court to see that their offense is just sometimes just painful to watch. And one of the reasons it's painful to watch is because besides LeBron and AD, they really can't shoot the three. Like, their role players just aren't that good. So I think when you had Chris Paul come back, who really has not been able to shoot the ball just due to what happened to him, but still be on the court, like, it's 2-2. You got home court. Obviously, Chris Paul's playing. If AD doesn't, that's huge. I think the Suns win the series. I'm a LeBron guy. I've always loved the guy. I've never been a hater. But I've seen enough Laker games in the past month to realize that their half-court offense is just never looked that fluent. Your three-point guys you want to hit open threes because they get them all the time aren't that good of shooters. And the Suns are just a more overall well-rounded basketball team. So if Chris Paul can get a little healthier, I think they win five, and then you got two chances to knock them out. And obviously we're going to see ultimate playoff LeBron step up, but even the way they've been handling his minutes, like, that was one part that also jumped out to me of game one, was how the minute restrictions, it was okay. Like, LeBron's on the court, they do okay. Straight to the bench. Like, it's like you play 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 5 minutes on,
and that's
five
what
minutes
I'm
off.
Saying, though, Marshall. That's what I mean. The fact that they have him. Have you ever seen him this tentative besides maybe game back-to-back games in that Dallas series in 2011?
No.
I've never. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But you got to give that side of it, too. That's lucky, too, that they're in this position. I mean, that's where you – besides LeBron not playing, that's where you'd want LeBron. A minute's restriction, and he's not going to the rack.
Yeah. And like I said, I think the Suns are just a more overall well-rounded team. If you're the Lakers, you're in trouble. But again, this is, and they've, and it feels like they do this almost every year. But you have to rehaul your bench again. And I know you had to trade a ton of pieces for Anthony Davis, which does make sense. But you had a general manager who had pretty much could pick anyone they wanted to. And I think they really just kind of botched it. Or you have guys on your team who you really need to reconsider just being part of the squad. Like,
well, let's not close the Lakers out yet and do a cap. We can't do a recap of the season yet.
Well, but I'm saying just for the series, like, would you rather have like KCP and Kuzma, or would you rather have like, you know, Jay Crowder and Bridges or Cameron Payne? Like, I think the answer is all the Phoenix guys. So,
well, my thing is, if AD plays in the second half, they could have won yesterday, and they'd be up 3-1. So that's why my point is, you have an opinion, I have an opinion here, and that's cool. But I just don't want to put a wrap on them yet. Let them lose, and then we can talk about their offseason stuff. That's all.
Yeah, well, I just hit offseason just because it's I don't know. I've never seen a team that they can't shoot the three for shit. But whatever. Again, I could care less about the Lakers. I hope the Suns do win. And Anthony Davis, they need him back desperately. Or I think when you got that Phoenix crowd at home, I think they're going to be able to pull it off. So, yeah, I think that the Suns have a great chance to advance. Hopefully Chris Paul gets a bit healthier.
Never thought I'd heard those words out of your mouth either. That's pretty funny. But my point is, I think you're colliding all this stuff into where the team is now. But if we flash back, you said I'd watched them the last month of the season. Well, dude, look at who was on the court the last month of the season. That's my whole point. When you flash back another month before that, they were one of the hottest teams, and a lot of those role players were fitting better than they are now. So that's why I don't want to go off until they actually get out, because we got to get to it. But
I just can't believe how shitty the role players are.
So 2 months ago they were. It was just a horrible team, shitty. They weren't one of the hottest teams that had a nice run through all one of the best teams in the league at the time. They were playing like shit this year? Because that's what you're talking about.
I've never said the Lakers role players are good.
About the team, though. The team was hot and looking good to repeat.
Due to LeBron or AD being on the court. Yeah.
Well, that's who's on the team, Marshall.
But those two guys have literally carried the team. Their role players and bench have been trash all year. You're surrounded by two premier top league talented guys.
I just heard this a lot last year too. That's all I'm saying. I just heard this a lot last year too. That everything was trash. Everything's trash. And then this year at least it's different because they actually had injuries, so that's why they had the spot. Yeah. But it's funny how a month and a half goes by and now it's trash again. Atlanta, speaking of not trash, Atlanta, my goodness, Atlanta. And I remember we were saying, man, they have a lot of quality kind of getting into their prime or guys that are in their prime players. Who's their number two that just stands out every game? I guess you can't necessarily say that every time. They do have layers to their team, though, that we're starting to see more and more of. The way they're doing it, Marshall, like, it's one thing to be up in a series and all that, but I mean, the way they're doing it, they are just freaking hot, dude. I mean, this is a surprise to me. And Rose is playing his ass off. If these last two games, he's really, played pretty damn well for the Knicks and all that. We can start to look at their role players too and go, maybe that, this is the team that's going to grow and this is their whatever. But the way Atlanta closed this season, Collins was on the block. There were some people that were, they were looking at making trades, and then they got hot and they've cruised into this season now or in the playoffs, I should say. And this is one of the biggest surprises for me right here, besides obviously the Bucks sweeping Miami, right? But this one I got to give Atlanta credit. They have an interesting layer of players around him that are helping him out in minor ways and some a little bit major. Kind of matters who we're talking about. But I got to give credit to Atlanta. I did not see them up 3-1. Now they can still lose the series. It all obviously depends on game five, in my opinion. But, dude, I didn't see this shit coming at all.
No, and the biggest thing is the fact that Julius Randle had a really, really, really good regular season, and Julius Randle is having a really, really, really not good postseason, and he's been their catalyst all year offensively. You know that Tibbs is going to get the team to play defensively, but when Atlanta gets hot and Trae Young gets going, they're a good offense, obviously. And when Julius Randle's not hitting all the crazy shots he did all year, like now you have a massive issue. And Trae Young is one of those guys who can carry a team. Like, if you're a Knicks fan, you probably hate the guy. You know, I mean, it's kind of got that – he has that Reggie Miller kind of – and I'm not saying he's a shooter Reggie Miller is, but he has that Reggie Miller persona of, oh, dude, I love Madison Square Garden. Like, when the fans say F you, that gets me playing harder. Like, that he's one of those people that loves being the villain. And, you know, he said it's bleeping quiet in here, and, like, we're going to go back to A-Town. Like, everything he said, he's backed up. Obviously, I mean, he's not the first player to ever talk trash. Like, I know that's part of sports, but they've been pushing all the right buttons, and the Knicks offensively have not been able to match it. And you've had the past couple of games where the Hawks have gone on runs where it's almost like, you know, you're obviously the boxing guy between us, and like the Hawks have thrown punches and the Knicks haven't punched back. They've been knocked on the mat. They've not gotten back up, and you can't keep having games where you give up a 20-4 run or a 17-3 run, especially on the road. And those are hard to come back from in playoffs, especially with the fans back now, which is such a beautiful thing. So,
yeah,
the Knicks are in trouble. Like, I know Madison Square Garden has been a lot of fun. I think people realize that on Twitter as well, despite a fan or two being a complete moron in a couple of different cities. But, I mean, I'm sure the Knicks fans will be doing all they can to support their team for game five, but Atlanta's playing a ton of confidence. Trae Young's the best player in the series. Their coaching change during the middle of the season was clearly one of the best moves made by the NBA this year from a coaching standpoint. And since then, they've taken over and they've just been a different squad. And I don't know. The Randle's got to find a way to step it up because he got the Most Improved Player of the Year award he completely deserved. But all year you heard people say he was taking shots that were super hard to make, and he just kept making crazy hard shots and just kept putting together games that were crazy. And come playoff time, Chris, obviously, you know, Atlanta's main focus was to stop him, and they've done it very successfully so far. So yeah, can Trae Young walk into Madison Square Garden and pull out another victory? He could, the way they're playing, they could, but, credit to them, because I do think that there was a perception going into the series that the Knicks were at least going to make it pretty tight. Like, I bet most people, just from a betting standpoint, would predict it'd be 2-2, or maybe Knicks 3-1 with the home court. But unless you're a diehard Hawks fan, I don't think many people saw 3-1. I'm not saying this is the most insane series we've discussed. Clearly, I have more passionate takes on the Lakers and the Suns more than this. But I don't think many people saw this going 3-1 from the way that Knicks played defense this year. But again, if your DNA is a defensive team and you're giving up runs that are more than 15-point swings consistently in the last couple of games, like, something is really gone wrong and you've really lost your momentum. And that can be really hard to get back at times in a series, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like they're going to win game five, but don't have any confidence in game six the way that's going. But I do have to credit Atlanta. They are playing awesome, no doubt about it. And there was kind of a no-name feel to the Knicks in a sense, beyond the star. You know, of course, Rose is a name, but, you know, he's under the basket type player now, and he's been playing his ass off, no doubt. And they got some vets and youngsters, but it was kind of like, not a team that's star-studded, obviously, right? They just popped up, and hey, we're in the playoffs for fourth seed, so they do have plenty of growth, no doubt. And I think they will be able to, you know, maneuver some things, being in that market now. And just in general, they have some life to them. But, wow, that Atlanta really, really showing a lot, no doubt about it. Now, that Denver-Portland series, you know, Portland came out, you know, kind of like gangbusters in the first game of the series. And then Denver came back, had a great game two, was able to win the game. What was it? 120 to 115. I'm looking at it right now for game three. Thought they played really good in game two. Kind of like it, the coach said, Malone, and it's Michael Malone. It's not Mike Malone. I didn't realize that. But he said they played soft, you know. This is a series that I did feel like, you know, would go pretty deep, and I think it's going to continue to go deep. Rivers, you know, went off. Gordon is playing pretty good in spots. I think they should get a little more out of him. Porter Jr., kind of like up and then down, but, you know, overall showing something. I still feel like this is going to go seven. I really do. But it's been a fun series, and hey, it's 2-2.
I think that both of these teams defensively can really suck on a given night. So what team can play better offense? And it's been weird because Jokic and Lillard have both had off nights in this series. Lillard was absolutely awful in game four, and the Blazers killed them. So, and in game one.
Yeah, 95 points too. Like, damn, you know, like 95. I didn't think that was even possible for either one of them to only score 95.
Yeah, and I mean, Jokic had a game where he's had one assist in the series. Like, it's just, I really think it's just whatever team can shoot better. And I know that's a really lame basic analysis, but if you watch a series at all, if either team decides to slouch on defense, they really aren't that good. Like, Portland has had moments this year where their starting five has been hot offensively. And I will say, this is one analysis I think I made right. I know you'd call me out if I didn't. But, like, with Lillard, McCollum, and Nurkic and Melo at times offensively, they could be a really special team. But offensively, yes. But defensively, still, again, this is a squad who's had issues all year. And when your offensive team is struggling, you're going to struggle. And when their threes aren't dropping like crazy, then, you know, they're average. And the Nuggets, Porter Jr. is becoming one of the more fun players to watch from an offensive standpoint of the game. But his defensive IQ is really, really poor. So the team that plays the less crappier defense, Chris, is going to win the series. Now, I don't know who it's going to be. I don't think home court really matters at all in the series. I think we have guys like Lillard and Jokic. I mean, sure, the fans help, but those guys can, on a given night, just turn on and they don't care whether they're home or away. So I think this is by far the most, if I had to flip a coin or I was the most scared to bet and predict in a wager in the series, I think this would be the one I would feel is still up in the air for either team. It just, who
did
can
we
make
both pick Portland? I think so, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I think we both had them in seven or six. I think I took Portland.
Yeah, I think
six.
It was seven. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
So I'm stating facts. People know, but again, if you watch this, it really is kind of a fun pickup style. Defensively, both teams are struggling, and you just have to come out with a better mental mindset. This being my last point, because as you said, Malone called his team soft. I watched the second half of that game four, especially in Denver, just looked lifeless. Jokic had like five bricks in a row, which I'm not the biggest fan of him, but I know the guy can shoot pretty damn well. And when he misses five or six shots at the front edge of the rim, clearly he was off, and the team just kind of just fed off that in a negative way. And the game went from like a 12-point game to a 30-point game. And Lillard hit 1-3. So how the hell does Portland win a game at home in the playoffs where Lillard hits 1-3 and is like 1 of 7? Like, you know, if you're Portland, you're like, dude, there's no way Lillard is going to have a cold game like that again in the whole series. So we got to feel good. And if you're Denver, you're saying, okay, yeah, we just played like trash. Our coach called us out to the media. Like, we're going to be better. So I said,
we were just up 2-1 without our second best player, you know?
I know. So it'll be fun. This one is complete goose chase. Who knows what's going to occur? Just maybe there can be some minor tweaks defensively, and that could be the overall point. I did think it was funny. In the start of game one, the Denver fans were booing Melo every time he touched the ball. I'm not quite sure why, but whatever, I guess. I mean, maybe. And he hit 5 threes in a row. And I think Vince Carter was announcing the game, and he's like, dude, if I'm Denver fans, I better shut up. You're booing the guy every time he's touching the ball, and he's hitting threes like he was, you know, playing in Syracuse. So that was just kind of a fun, comical moment to start off that series.
Yeah, they had a good run, too, and got to a conference final, lost to the Lakers.
I was going to say, and now for the Grizz. I mean, this has definitely been a fun one with the Warriors out, and God knows how much help they need. Memphis is, I've always kind of liked them, but there's one of their main guys I always listen to his talk show, so I love watching Memphis, and they're a fun team I cheer for. They're sitting okay. Like, you have a chance to win tonight, and that means you still have a chance in the series. I think that when Memphis won game one, that caught me by surprise. Clearly, they took the momentum from beating Golden State. And
you're covering your mic a little.
Oh, whoops. Sorry. They took the momentum from game one of they had the momentum from beating Golden State to take it into game one. And Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks played out of their minds and got a W. Game two, the Jazz answered because they missed a lot of threes in game one. They normally don't, and they fought back. And in game three, that was really a pretty damn good game until the last couple minutes when Mike Conley said, dude, I know Memphis is my home place, and that's where I got my jersey retired, but sorry, y'all, I'm going to take over this game. And Conley did, which that dude's one of the most savviest vets in the NBA, and he literally carried that team down the stretch, and it's got to be so weird as a Memphis fan to see.
He has the jersey retired there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that already.
Yeah,
don't have KG, but this dude's still playing, and he's got a – okay, go ahead, sorry.
No, yeah, I think him and Tony Allen and Zebo, I think – yeah, I'm pretty sure. I could be – yeah, but I think they all got the jerseys retired. Interesting. So, yeah, it's just it's been a fun one. Memphis, I've been ripping on lots of teams today, and I'll do the same for Memphis.
We can go back to the Lakers if you want.
At times, their offense can be abysmal. Like, Memphis is a team that plays a lot of players, for better or worse. They have one of the deeper benches in the NBA. But that doesn't necessarily mean that when those bench guys come in, they're going to be lights out. So if Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks are on, they're a fun team to watch offensively. When those guys are off, it's like watching paint dry. They were the best NBA team at running fast break points this year, but half court offensively, they're still a team that has a lot of work to do just because they have a lot of young players. I think they're one of the youngest teams in the league. So I think they could win tonight. I know that their crowd, obviously, they have a nice home court to feed off of. I think the game should be close. But you really do need Morant and Dylan Brooks to keep going off like crazy, which is hard to expect two guys to go off like crazy because, for example, in the first half of game three, Chris, when you were down at half, Jaren Jackson III and Jonas Valanciunas had 5 points collectively. So, yet in like a couple of games, those guys have been kind of attacking Gobert and scoring pretty easily. So, the Memphis offense really is hit or miss. And when they hit, they can be close. But I honestly think if the Jazz wrap this up, if the Jazz hit their threes, Memphis really, they're not quite there yet. Like, this is a team I think can be continue to become better because Morant really has shown a new stride in the playoffs. He's really been coming off pick and rolls and almost he appears to be unguardable as fast as he is. But you're not going to win a series with your point guard scoring layup after layup after layup. So you got to hope that the Jazz miss threes, and you got to hope that your Morant and Dylan Brooks score, and you need some help from people. But again, their bench and role players are really, really unpredictable. So yeah, but I think Memphis wins tonight, but I think Jazz still take the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jazz definitely will take the series. Ja became fourth player in NBA history to drop 100 points over his first three playoff games. He joins Wilt Chamberlain, George Mikan, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Now, obviously, a lot of these offensive stats are starting to get out of hand because, you know, it just off of shooting that many more threes, the amount of possessions they get now, the pace has gone up. And so some of the offensive stuff record-wise is a little funky because you're like, yeah, I hear you, but these are, different game, different rules, all that. But still, it's damn impressive, sure. No doubt about it. And if you look at it, we're not able to get the full scope as far as TV ratings go thus far, just because of it will be where the hell did it go? Because of the holiday, you can get out stuff out quicker. But this is as of Thursday before this weekend, so the first week of the playoffs is no surprise up 61% from the bubble, but it's actually up 3% from the 2019 season. And obviously having the Lakers and Suns go game seven, which, I don't see how that won unless the Suns win, right? That's going to help media-wise, too, that they probably didn't have those games or whatever at that time. But so you could definitely see, a lot of people. It's funny how the crowd does make so much a difference. We knew it, but watching it, we knew it as far as the bubble. We talked about it during the bubble. We're starting to see that. Some of that played into Miami. Some of that played into other stuff. The higher seed, too, not having the home court, something they fought through and, for the whole year and all that type of stuff. But just watching it as a fan, and obviously you're not having to pick. If you're a hardcore fan of a sport, you're going to pick those playoffs. If the playoffs are on, you're going to pick that sport, and you're probably not going to watch the other sport as much. I know that's how it was. If baseball and NBA had to go head-to-head, and their ratings were really rough last year in the fall because they never have to do that. So, but I have noticed just that the difference of watching this with crowds. I'll tell you what, I do love the bench location for the players. I know that's going to change. I do love how the benches are way more active right now with this arena setup, and I know that's going to change because they're going to be standing up too much, or they'll be on the court, or I'm sure they're going to go back to the old rules. But there is something to say about the bench this whole season, but especially in the playoffs as well. I really like the setup of it, but of course, like I said, that is going to change just off of more tickets you can sell for a higher price. You know what I mean? Obviously, there's other stuff to talk about, but not really because those series are done. We'll be back next Monday, though. Why don't you wrap this puppy up, sir?
Thank you, as always, for listening. We will see the Western Conference is definitely giving us more fun than expected. So Chris and I will be excited to come back and talk about how the Suns beat the Lakers and, they need to get a whole new bench and all that shit. We'll have plenty of information to talk about, and I hope that Lillard's able to have the third ever series clinching game shot. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Lillard has a walk-off winner, especially in like a game six or game seven. That's what that guy does. So until then, thanks for the support. We love it. Enjoy your summer. Enjoy having fun. Hopefully you can get out and have a little vacation with friends and family. The boys are out tonight. Peace.